Welcome to the deep dive. You know, we often spend our time digging into really complex systems, big data, global politics, corporate stuff. But sometimes you find the biggest lessons about, say, incentives or collaboration or even just unleashing creativity, well, they come from really unexpected places. Today, we're doing a deep dive into organizational design. And our source material is, believe it or not, a short story called The Great Apple Orchard Race.
It really does sound a bit whimsical, doesn't it? But honestly, this story, it's a fantastic case study. We're going to be looking closely at excerpts from this narrative set in the Appleton Orchard. And our mission here is to get past the simple storyline and really dissect the framework behind it. How did this event, which on the surface looks like a competition, end up getting almost everyone involved, maximizing the collective result, and maybe most interesting, completely changing how success was measured for everyone there?
Okay, yeah, let's unpack that. Mm-hmm. So we have a pretty straightforward goal, right? Collect apples, put them in the big basket, simple enough. But then they add this one constraint, this organizational rule that just changes the whole DNA of the thing.
Oh, absolutely. That constraint, that's the masterstroke. It takes what could be just a race about who's fastest and turns it into, well, an exploration of what's possible.
And the core rule was participants could only use the wackiest ways they could imagine to move the apples.
Mm.
So efficiency is basically out the window. If you tell people not to use the standard best practice, what does that actually unlock? Behaviorally, I mean.
That's exactly the right question. I mean, think about a normal race. You'd optimize everything for speed, maybe standardize the equipment. But mandating wackiness, it immediately shifts the whole focus. It moves from outcome, speed to process innovation. Mm-hmm. They're basically saying, look, how you do it is actually more important than how fast you do it.
Yeah.
It stops any single dominant strategy from taking over, ensures nobody can just win by, copying the leader.
So it kind of forces, what would you call it? Distributed optimization. Like everyone has to invent a system that fits their own unique skills, maybe their limitations too.
Precisely. In a typical setup, maybe in business competition, right? The biggest or fastest player often sets the standard and everyone else just tries to catch up to copy. Here, copying is actually failure. You have to be original. So the design itself is built to reward diverse thinking, diverse, maybe intellectual capital, right from the start. It's a way to make sure that the person or the creature with the most unique idea, not necessarily the best gear, has a real shot.
And the list of who was actually in this race shows just how diverse that capital was.
Mm.
It wasn't just people running. You had kids, different kinds of animals, even a few silly scarecrows just sitting there at the start line. Everyone was welcome, it seems, because the rules could accommodate literally everyone.
And that's absolutely key if you want to maximize participation, isn't it? If the rule was, say, you must use a wheelbarrow, well, most of those participants are out immediately. But wacky ways. Suddenly the scarecrow, stuck in the ground, has just as much chance to innovate within its own reality as the twins do.
Okay, so this is where the implementation, how those wacky rules actually played out, gets really fascinating. We move from the theory to, operational examples. The story gives us some really distinct case studies and adaptation.
Yeah, these examples are just perfect. They show how the system encouraged everyone to leverage their own sort of innate characteristics, turn them into an advantage.
Okay, let's start with the ground game. You had Milo and Nia, the twins. They turned it into a kind of soccer match.
Yeah.
Rolling the apples with their feet. High throughput, probably relied on agility, constant movement.
Yeah, and contrast that immediately with Benny the bear. Benny's big, he's probably quite careful. He didn't try rolling. He balanced them, precariously, it says, on his nose. Now, that method sounds incredibly risky, probably low volume compared to the twins, but maybe, just maybe, it yields the highest quality delivery. He has to move slowly, deliberately.
And then you get this completely different approach.
Yeah.
Vertical specialization bypasses ground traffic altogether. A family of squirrels. They became a speedy acorn train, souping apples, zipping along branches. They used a whole other dimension, the canopy, that others just couldn't access.
That's brilliant, isn't it? That vertical transport piece. It's a perfect example of niche specialization. They were probably never going to compete on sheer volume with the twins down on the ground, but by using a resource only they could tap into, they maximized their own unique, localized advantage.
Now the scarecrow. That might be my favorite innovator in this whole story. It stuffed apples into its straw shirt until it watered like a balloon. It took its own built-in limitation being stationary and adapted it, turned itself into a mobile storage unit.
It's the ultimate lesson in using what you've got, isn't it? Internal resource adaptation. The Scarecrow couldn't run, couldn't balance like Benny, so it changed its entire function, repurposed its own structure for collection. So the race wasn't won by, you know, one single method, one powerful engine. It was like a symphony of all these specialized, maybe even suboptimal individually, but collectively functional little processes. And that level of diversity is what really maximized the whole orchard's harvest in the end.
Okay, so if the race had just stayed like that, individualistic, wacky, everyone doing their own thing, it would have been interesting, yeah, but still fundamentally competitive. But the real kicker, the big lesson, seems to come about halfway through. The narrative shifts.
Yeah.
Competition gives way to cooperation.
Yes, this is the moment. This is where the immediate environment, the situation on the ground, kind of overrides the initial incentives. And the trigger was simple. An apple rolled into a muddy puddle.
Right. Now, normally in a high-stakes race, what happens then? Your instinct is probably self-interest, maybe conflict. If a resource gets tricky like an apple in the mud, you might just ignore it, go for easier ones, or maybe fight someone else for the clean ones. Why was this different?
Well, the muddy puddle wasn't another competitor, was it? It acted like an external shock. Maybe we could call it a shared organizational challenge or threat. Up till then, you know, Milo's rolling was kind of competing with Benny's balancing. But the mud, that was an obstacle everyone faced together. And the moment that shared threat appeared, their individual roles runner balancer sort of dissolved. They became one thing, a team.
And the text is really clear here. They stopped fighting over it instantly. They just switched gears, worked together, scooped it out. And what was the payoff? That immediate emotional reward. They shouted, teamwork. Then they tossed the muddy apple in the basket.
Yeah. That shout, teamwork. That's the crucial data point, you know? It's an immediate high-value emotional feedback loop. The reward for getting that single muddy apple wasn't really about the apple itself. It was much more about the shared feeling, the experience of beating that obstacle together. They learned something vital right there. The buzz, the intrinsic reward from collaborating, felt better. It was more reinforcing than just grabbing another apple for themselves.
It feels like the moment where the collective good, the shared value system, just permanently takes over from the competitive drive. And the story actually says this directly, doesn't it? That teamwork and creativity made the challenge fun.
Fun. Fun is such an underrated tool in organizations. If your process is genuinely fun, people stick with it. It's sustainable. If collaborating is fun, it can actually beat the instinct for rivalry. And the fact this shift happened mid-race, just spontaneously, it suggests that when you've got that diverse environment, when everyone feels they can participate, sometimes all it takes is that external nudge, that shock, to get everyone pulling together towards a bigger goal.
Which brings us really neatly to the final outcome. And maybe the most powerful lesson here for anyone thinking about organizational design, how they redefine success. So the result of all this wacky effort, now unified, the giant harvest basket overflowed, red, green, golden apples everywhere, just abundance.
The abundance is metric number one, absolutely. But metric number two, that's the revolutionary one. It's stated right there in the text. No one knew who collected the most.
Think about that. In almost any other race, a sales contest, quarterly reviews, funding pitches, knowing the individual winner is the whole point. The fact that the sheer overwhelming success of the group completely wiped out the need for individual scores, it tells you the initial goal was successfully, maybe intentionally subverted.
It feels like it was subverted by the very design of the event. The wacky ways rule led to diverse methods, which led to everyone joining in, which ultimately maximized the total haul. And by making the individual tally irrelevant in the end, the organizers, or maybe the system itself, ensured the victory belonged to everyone. They designed a system where trying to optimize for your own score was actually less rewarding than optimizing for the collective outcome, that overflowing basket.
It makes you think, if you're designing, say, a team project, and the final measure isn't individual contribution, but the sheer collective output, the total success. Doesn't that change everything? You'd stop hoarding information or resources to beat the person next to you, right? You start sharing because their success directly fuels your collective success.
Absolutely. The real success here was measured by, well, utility, everyone gets fed, happy bellies, and collective well-being, immense fun was had. The lack of a single winner just hammers home the point. The process success, getting everyone involved, fostering that collaboration, was valued more than assigning credit. The celebration wasn't for the fastest twin or the highest balancing bear. It was for the whole orchard being full.
So the race was never really about speed or who was best individually. It was more like a structured experiment. and experiment in maximizing creativity everywhere, maximizing enjoyment, and that led directly to this incredible abundance.
And that final scene really cements it, doesn't it? The post-event celebration. That shared joy, the apple cider, the pies, the text mentions, apple smiles around a bonfire. That's the final reinforcement. The emotional payoff from the collective win gets spread equally. Everyone feels they own that success. It wasn't just about getting the job done. It was about celebrating the positive culture they built while doing it.
So wrapping up this deep dive, it seems clear that even in a simple setup like this, if you have clear rules that specifically push for creativity and you foster a culture where collaboration can emerge, you fundamentally shift what winning even means. You move away from that zero-sum game towards, well, shared abundance and celebration.
Yeah, and it really forces us to ask some tough questions about our own metrics, doesn't it? In our organizations, our teams, we so often focus on optimizing the individual star performer, but that can lead straight to, you know, knowledge hoarding, internal competition, silos. So what if the true measure of success for your next big project was different, not measured by who had the highest score, but by how much real innovation you unlocked, by how much shared fun and happy smiles resulted? How would you need to change the structure, the rules of the race to achieve that?
And maybe crucially, following that thought, what's your organization's version of the muddy puddle? Is there a challenge, maybe one you could even design, or one that just happens that's so unifying it forces your specialized silos to drop the rivalry, to realize that working together isn't just helpful, it's actually the most rewarding way forward? That's definitely a thought to take into your next meeting.
It certainly is the Appleton Orchard. It's more than just a cute story. It feels like a blueprint for a different kind of excellence. Distributed excellence, maybe.
Well, thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the surprisingly complex and rather inspiring world of apple harvesting.